one of NASA's architects of future air travel, joins the private sector. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. It was just announced that Dr. Bruce Holmes, a retired NASA strategist with impressive academic and research credentials, has joined DayJet, which is about to debut a point-to-point small jet service based in Florida. Aero News Editor-in-Chief Jim Campbell got the chance to talk with Dr. Bruce Holmes. Here's their conversation.
We got some interesting news at ANN the other day. A lot of stuff crosses the news desk, but we found out that one of our favorite NASA types, Bruce Holmes, had joined DayJet. DayJet, as everybody's been reading ANN for the last few years, understands now that DayJet has a new model for getting people from point A to point B. And who better than one of NASA's bright stars and chief thinkers? And to make a long story short, we're happy to present Bruce Holmes. Bruce, what's this for the private sector?
Well, I'm about to find out. It's going to be pretty exciting. We've got a path in front of us that has been building for some time. I'm excited for our past, and I'm even more excited for our future in this whole business about how we all get around in the future.
Bruce, you were associated with some of NASA's most provocative programs, at least when viewed from a general or business aviation standpoint, most particularly SATS. If you would, can you talk about the SATS mission that you oversaw in a number of areas and how that has paved the way for what Ed Iacobucci and the gang at DayJet are trying to accomplish?
Sure. The basic concept for the small aircraft transportation system started as a technology strategy many years ago, actually, arguably even at the very beginning of what we call the AGAT Alliance, the Advanced General Aviation Transport Experiments Alliance, that preceded the SATS, or Small Aircraft Transportation System project, for a few years. The idea at the beginning was that we needed an industry in America capable of delivering new products and services for more widely spread use of smaller aircraft and community airports for public transportation. That was the long and short of it. The AGAT program focused on the aircraft, and the SATS program focused on airspace.
The program created quite a buzz in the industry. It was an interesting demonstration. I guess it's been the better part of 2 years now. The West Virginia demonstration.
I was in Danville, Virginia. It was okay. Summer of 2005.
Right.
And the purpose of that demonstration was to illustrate that there were a set of operating capabilities enabled by new technologies in the airplanes that could allow small aircraft flying into smaller community airports to operate as safely and in near all weather conditions like we're used to at big airports. And when I say small airports, I'm talking about airports that do not have typically control towers, do not have instrument landing systems or radar for separation and sequencing, and also may not even have line-of-sight VHF communications. And so they're the sorts of airports of which there are thousands across the country that potentially could be useful for public transportation if, and so the if was to demonstrate these operating capabilities at Danville, which we did.
Well, this was in large part an empowerment exercise for concept like that espoused by DayJet. How do you see now, as you're walking into the private sector from government for so many years, how do you see the DayJet mission and the role in taking these technologies and taking these mission profiles and actually communicating them to real business?
I see the DayJet mission as an extension of the vision that we started years ago for this use of small aircraft in community airports, and also in a form that took root in the next generation air transportation system concept of operations in the office of the Joint Planning and Development Office, it's called, in Washington, D.C., which was the organization of the several departments and agencies that have purview in air transportation working together to develop an answer to the question, how do we fit three times or more as many flights into the national airspace system in the future, and how do we ensure mobility of the sort that we really strongly benefit from in the 21st century?
Well, one of the more enticing aspects of this model is that those airports and those parts of the airspace which are the most crowded and the most utilized are frankly kind of going to be eschewed by Dayjet. You really don't want much to do with that. Your concept here is to take people where they live and work, which is usually not in the middle of Hartsfield, not in the middle of JFK, and so forth. It would seem to me not only is this an empowerment exercise for business to get from point A to point B, but also a more uniform and more economical, for lack of a better way to put it, use of our airspace and facilities.
I think one of the realities that is emerging as the Dayjet model, business model, starts to take shape is that we actually do, as we've been promoting for the idea we've been promoting for some time, and Dayjet is now able to make real, we actually do have an abundance of airspace and obviously airports. It's just that we haven't had the business models and the technology supporting those business models and the aircraft supporting those business models until now.
Well, bringing somebody like you into the organization is certainly a step forward for Dayjet. My question to you, though, is what are your current missions? Where do you see yourself having to hunker down and really get to work? What are your initial goals for Dayjet?
Well, I've maintained for some time that it will be fairly straightforward for these new transportation, jet taxis, air taxis, fleet operators to get started in the industry. And we've already seen some existence proofs out there that these business models hold great potential. I've always maintained that they can get started okay with the way things are in the airspace today. But if you want to tip up the growth curve from the early adopter, shallow growth of the early adopter market to the real strong potential core growth in the next four, five, six, and more years, then several things happen. And they're all related to technology, strategy, and the research supporting that. And that's my job. Quite simply, I see the role that Ed and the company have given me is putting the technology strategy together that makes it possible for the market to expand more rapidly than if we didn't do these things in the airspace, in the airports, and in the aircraft.
I would imagine, though, that the going from government service to private industry is going to be a bit of a change. Are you ready for it?
it feels seamless to me. I don't know quite how to explain that other than the fact that I've been working in this field for arguably very focused for 10 or 12 years, and in general for all of the 33 years I spent at NASA. And so I actually haven't had much of a thought about that other than, having people ask me the question and just responding that it is a fairly natural, seamless feeling for me to move into this new role.
Well, obviously, Dayjet is just getting a hold of its airplanes and is a pretty aggressive path ahead of it in order to get up and operating, which is due on the schedule here in the not-too-distant future. What do you see the ramp-up like? Where do you see the stumbling blocks in trying to build a system and a workflow that's never been accomplished in the past, and especially when there's no rule book because, frankly, there have been no rules?
Those are the big challenges. I mean, this is going to be a continual invention and innovation process, and quite frankly, that's the part that excites me so much. I think the sticking points will be all around the airspace. Well, there will be several, but one of the main ones will be around the airspace issues. We need to be able to operate with minimum friction, if you want to call it that, in the airspace to the airports en route and in the approach procedures at the terminals that we want to operate in and out of. These small airports, many of them don't have precision guidance to every runway end. Most of them don't. We need the capability to operate. I'll just give you one simple example. You know, if you've got a trip of 45 minutes between point A and point B, then you have to go into a holding pattern for 15 or 20 minutes. You just kind of shot the network performance right in the foot. So we've really got to have the ability, using the RNP capabilities of these aircraft and the RNP required navigation performance procedures in the National Airspace System for en route and terminal operations, that quite simply removes friction, removes waste, if you will, in the form of time and therefore cost from the operations in our network. So it will all be about network performance and finding the waste and getting rid of it.
We'll hear more with Jim Campbell and Dr. Bruce Holmes in just a moment. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR-22 GTS, Cirrus's premium luxury ride that has come to define Cirrus aircraft as one of the world's elite. Every dream option, from supple leather seats to an exhilarating 310 horsepower performance and speed, come standard, giving new meaning to the phrase fully loaded. When flying the SR-22 GTS, getting there is truly more than half the fun. To learn more, call 888-750-9000 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. Clarity Aloft headsets employ patented Comply Canal tips, composed of soft viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. More than simple earplugs, these foam tips provide full-spectrum noise reduction and outstanding attenuation. This advanced technology is lab-tested, proving that viscoelastic passive noise reduction is superior to active noise reduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to our Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plagg, and we're listening to Jim Campbell's conversation with Dr. Bruce Holmes, a retired NASA strategist who just signed on with DayJet.
Tell us about the Eclipse. There were a number of aircraft that could have been selected, depending on who you talk to. In many cases, some people say this is the only airplane for the job, and it certainly seems that way when you look at the model. But how uniquely qualified is this airplane for this mission?
I think that the best way to view what airplane makes sense is actually that maybe ask the question a little differently, is what ecology of airplanes makes sense, and the belief that, of course, DayJet has, and I share, is that the Eclipse is just excellent for starting the early adopter core growth of the market. When folks like Chris Anderson started talking in terms of the long tail of markets, you know, and trying to explain how market phenomena like Netflix and Google and Amazon and iTunes, for example, were able to aggregate and then monetize market behavior in what was called the long tail of the market, which is a reference to fairly thin markets. You know, you have small numbers of pieces of music that play, small numbers of time. But if you can aggregate those into a business model and then figure out how you charge people for that and not have the waste of shelf life issues and so forth, then you can actually create an industry that has great potential. And so in our case, in the aviation business, the question is, okay, so what airplanes allow us to aggregate thin markets in air transportation between communities that will never be served by scheduled service because you just can't make money that way? And part of the answer is to have an airplane that's small enough but has enough appeal and enough speed and performance and economics that you can reach out into these thin markets. From the analysis that DayJet has done, and actually some of the analysis that NASA did before DayJet really got started, it was clear that small aircraft of the four six, maybe eight passenger size. We're very much in the sweet spot of this new opportunity in, quote, the long tail, unquote.
There are a number of pundits and, frankly, pseudo-competitors who seem to think that the Dayjet model is smoke and mirrors, that it can't work, that this is an aggressive idea that is destined to fail. Of course, a lot of this is being said by people with stock in the airlines or with invested interests in other air taxi models. What do you say to that kind of blanket criticism for a program that is yet to be seen in the light of day?
Well, I think it's understandable, actually, from the standpoint of folks who have built mental models, paradigms, if you will, around scheduled airline service in you know, using yield management and the sorts of markets that, those transportation services can satisfy the needs in very adequately. And when you take a look at an on-demand model and try to picture it as actually reaching out into this, as I referred to earlier, the long tail of these very thin markets, and if you tried to imagine doing that and didn't have the knowledge that comes from the modern developments in the science of networks, in particular, in complex systems, complexity science, if you will, it would be impossible to delve into the operational understanding, logistics understanding about how this could possibly work. It would just, you know, it would be so far outside of the mental models and paradigms that it's completely understandable that the prospects of this working would look impossible or certainly mysterious. Smoke and mirrors is the term you used. And yet, when you see the convergence of what I call the revolution in the cost of speed that the eclipse brings forward, combined with the revolution from complexity science that enables real-time on-demand logistics management of the sort that Dayjet has created, it's a lot less mysterious. So, I mean, there are folks who, I can't remember who said the quote, you know, any technology when it first appears on the scene looks like magic, or smoke and mirrors, I suppose. And that would certainly be true here. It'll take a while for us to prove that this works, obviously, but we're going to know a lot here in the next 12 months or so.
Well, it's going to be fun to watch you from this standpoint. A final question for you, if I may. It took a lot of different factors and a lot of technologies to mature to get to a point where Ed and his crew at Dayjet could reasonably take the chance at creating this new model and this new concept. The question I have is this. Are all the technical barriers in hand? Is there anything on the horizon that could conceivably make this model more profitable or easier to accomplish? And of all of these, is there anyone that you're particularly worried about?
Propulsion. I would say propulsion and fuels, energy in particular, will be one of the challenges of the future growth of this sector. And I think that challenge will shape up here over the next 10 years or so. So I'm not saying we have a lot of time to deal with it, but we've got to get busy with that issue now. And there's an enormous wave of activities that have begun in looking at alternative fuels, and we need to be one of the early adopters of, you know, however all of that develops. The successful business models in this new sector, this new on-demand, you know, jet fleet taxi sector, will want to be able to have enough agility, I guess, in their fleets to move into alternative fuels as those things, as they become part of the fabric of the way transportation works as the 21st century unfolds. I think there will be some other challenges too. You know, we have a lot to learn about using airplanes at these high rates of annual utilization and maintenance cycles, and maintaining a complement of crew readiness and training and so forth. I mean, just the usual challenges of taking care of a complex business operation that's as intense as an activity like this will be, of course, will be challenging. But I do believe that propulsion will be one of the leading items. There will be some others, too. I think, in the end, if we want to see the potential of this market truly grow, we'll want aircraft operational capabilities, cost capabilities that come down in the future. And, you know, if you look at the typical range of direct operating costs quoted for airplanes like the Eclipse or the Atom or the others, at around a dollar a mile, try to imagine what it might look like to have another generation, say, in several years of aircraft with a direct operating cost of half that, and what that could mean to the market growth in the future. And that'll be another great push that we'll want to be after.
Exciting stuff. If I can push for one more question.
Sure.
Right now, there's some discussion on the Senate in regards to FAA reauthorization, the user fee proposal, whether or not there's going to be a $25 per flight plan charge, whether or not there's going to be all kinds of additional fuel taxes, whether or not there's going to be fees for all manner of services that were formerly provided through our taxes. The question I have is this: how critical is the ultimate result of this current reauthorization problem, if you will, to the future health and viability of DayJet?
Well, let me start out with the outcome. The outcome everyone's after is to have the investments possible in transforming the air traffic management system for the 21st century and the related issues around aircraft and airport systems. We just have to have that. One of the points that I believe is very important in the case of DayJet and the users of this new generation of aircraft is that, by and large, we have equipped these aircraft, or certainly made them ready, just by virtue of their required navigational performance capabilities, to conduct operations that are conceived of in the next generation air transportation system concept. And so, in large part, we would make a case that we've made a down payment in the form of the investment in the aircraft technologies that enable us to operate in the ways that are envisioned in the CONOPS, Concept of Operations for Next Gen. And so, to pay twice for that, once in the form of the current investment in the aircraft, and then pay again in terms of fees that might be levied. It might not make the greatest sense at the outset. So we'll certainly want to take a look at that and look at what's fair in the end and what gets us to the outcome, which is this transformation of the system that we all have to have.
We've been talking to Dr. Bruce Holmes, formerly NASA's chief strategist out of NASA Langley, and now the director of Air Systems Research for DayJet. Bruce, welcome to private industry. Welcome to the mess, if you will. It's quite a business, but I have to tell you, from watching what you've done over the years, we're really glad to have you on our side.
Well, I think this is the most exciting epic in aviation, and I'm glad to be in the middle of it.
Bruce, thank you once again.
Sure thing, Jim.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.